This Morning, America's First News, starts right after this.
As a business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Further disaster avoided. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. It is Wednesday, November 15. Glad you could be with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
A gunman on a rampage has killed at least four people in Northern California. Officials say a school on lockdown saved children's lives when the killer arrived.
The effort to push tax reform has now been merged with a fight over health care. Hear the latest proposal from Senate Republicans.
Attorney General Jeff Sessions testified before the House Judiciary Committee about Russia contacts.
And most people, according to surveys these days, think marijuana is fine. It's the politicians that don't.
What we really have is a long data set going back a long period of time since the 70s, and this is the first time ever that we've seen that a majority of people in all three parties agree that it should be legal.
Harry Enten at 538.com on changing attitudes about weed. A gunman in rural Northern California has killed at least four people and wounded 10 others in an apparent random shooting spree. Tehama County Assistant Sheriff Phil Johnston says the gunman shot at people and property in at least seven locations. Two children in a subdivision were among the wounded. Mr. Johnston says it, quote, looks like a guy trying to get even with his neighbor.
I have to say that this incident, as tragic and as bad as it is, could have been so much worse if it wasn't for the quick thinking and staff at our elementary school.
Officials say teachers at Rancho Tehama Elementary heard gunfire and immediately locked down the facility. The school was the shooter's third stop, and he became frustrated when he couldn't get into the school. He was at the school for 6 minutes before driving off. Police eventually rammed his vehicle, forced him off the road, and killed him in a shootout. The Sacramento Bee, by the way, identified the gunman as 43-year-old Kevin Neal. To Washington now, Attorney General Jeff Sessions is defending himself from any suggestion that he lied in his testimony before Congress about his knowledge of contacts between the Trump campaign and Russian officials. Mr. Sessions, in his first appearance before Congress, since two former Trump campaign advisors testified that they told Mr. Sessions about their contacts with Russia, said, quote, I have at all times conducted myself honorably. I have always told the truth.
I had no participation in any wrongdoing with regard to influence in this campaign improperly.
The revelations from former advisors George Papadopoulos and Carter Page appear to contradict previous testimony that Mr. Sessions gave to the Senate. Another takeaway from yesterday's testimony, Mr. Sessions is entertaining the idea of appointing a special counsel to investigate the Clinton Foundation and the sale of a uranium company to Russia and how the FBI exonerated Hillary Clinton on her emails. But Mr. Sessions does not seem totally convinced that a special counsel is necessary. The tax rewrite just got more complicated. Senate Republicans have made a critical addition to a bill designed to overhaul the tax code. They're including a repeal of the individual mandate in the Affordable Care Act. They also would set all of their tax cuts for individuals to expire at the end of 2025 to comply with a procedural requirement. The cut in the corporate tax rate, however, would remain permanent. Vice President Mike Pence pushed broader reform during remarks at the Wall Street Journal's CEO Council in Washington.
We have a historic opportunity to renew sustained American growth at 3% or more, benefiting the American economy, American workers, and American businesses for generations.
The New York Times says the new strategy attempts to solve two problems, math and politics. Repealing the mandate, a long-standing Republican goal, would save hundreds of billions of dollars over the next decade. That would free up money for middle-class tax cuts. It's 11 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Glad you could be with us. Welcome into Wednesday. We're coming to you today from the Dell Studios. Need help finding the right Dell PCs with Intel Core processors for your business? Call 877-BUY-DELL to talk to a Dell Small Business Tech Advisor. The bombshell sexual misconduct allegations against Alabama GOP nominee Roy Moore have roiled the state's Senate race, giving Democrats an unusual chance to win a seat in the deep red state. But while a growing number of Republicans have called on Mr. Moore to leave the race, his Democratic opponent, Doug Jones, has largely kept quiet. It's a story from Lisa Hagan, campaign reporter at The Hill. Lisa, what's up?
That's largely been a strategy since the allegations broke in a Washington Post story about 4 or 5 days ago and last Thursday. Jones has been largely quiet on it. He only really brings it up if he's pressed about it by a reporter. He tries to, you know, shift the focus to healthcare and jobs, issues that are usually talked about, more local issues in Senate campaigns. But it seems that we're already seeing a little bit shift in strategy. We're seeing a new ad by him. He's been going up a lot on the airwaves. This is his first ad since the allegations broke, and he decided to run an ad that had Republicans saying that they can't support him and they don't trust him. So we're seeing he's trying to figure out ways he can incorporate these allegations into his campaign. But overall, he has tried to keep the focus on his campaign and what he can do for Alabama.
I guess that can be tricky at times. I think there was there an analyst in your story or an observer who said something along the lines of it's already bleeding, right? The wound, just let it bleed or something like that?
Yeah, it seems like that's what's been the strategy for him and Democrats largely across the board. They feel like, you know, this is a story that keeps on snowballing a bit. We've already had another accuser come out against Moore. So they're kind of just letting this play out. Republicans are calling on him to step aside, and it used to be that they were calling on him to step down if true. Now we're seeing that they are just calling for him to immediately drop from the race. Some of them are even floating that he be expelled if he still wins and becomes the next senator. So it's been a strategy to let kind of Republicans, you know, deal with this and cope with the fallout. And Democrats, especially national ones in Washington, feel like at this point they don't really have to invest heavily in the race. Doug Jones has already raised a lot of money. He's been up on the airwaves for more than a month now. And they feel like he can run his own campaign without getting Washington muddied in that.
Well, and to be clear, probably national Democrats would not be welcome in Alabama, at least kind of from a political ad standpoint, I guess, right?
Right. That's been their argument the whole time. We keep asking the national committees, are they planning to invest? Are they planning to invest more? And we haven't really gotten an answer on that. And I think they're, as we said before, letting Republicans just, you know, deal with this, the fallout, and more as well. And I think they're going to do this wait-and-see approach because he's, you know, Jones has been fine raising money. He's been a pretty prolific fundraiser considering it's Alabama, and they feel like Washington can kind of tarnish him. It's not a well-liked entity in Alabama, and it's still a deep red electorate. So, and Doug Jones made that clear in his campaign. He is in his first ad out since he won his primary. He said that, you know, Washington is broken and both parties need a reality check, as he says. So they want to kind of keep that, I guess, Washington stink away, as you will, and not muddy the waters in that way. So it's been largely the strategy.
We're speaking with Lisa Hagan, campaign reporter at The Hill. She's written a piece about Alabama Democratic Senate candidate Doug Jones, whose strategy largely has been to lie low as these sexual assault allegations pile up against the Republican candidate Roy Moore. What about the possibility of Alabama's Republican governor moving the election date?
Right, that's been a thing floated by some Republicans. She's done it once before. The special election wasn't supposed to be till 2018, and when the governor at the time resigned amid a sex scandal, she, you know, Governor Kay Ivey, became the governor and decided to move it up into to December, which is when the general election will be. People have floated that. People have asked. I think her office has said that they are not entertaining the thought. They are not planning to do that. So as of right now, we are having a general election on December 12th, a little less than a month now. It's something that they're trying to think of, and if they're able to extend it a little bit longer, that would be their way of trying to maybe get him off the ballot, since there is no choice now. He is on the ballot regardless of if he stays in or not.
Yeah.
But as of right now, it seems like the most likely option is that we are having a special election in December.
Thanks, Lisa. Lisa Hagan, campaign reporter at The Hill. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
According to the gunman behind a rampage in Northern California was out on bail on a charge of stabbing a neighbor and had been the subject of a domestic violence call the day before yesterday's attack. But Kevin Neal was free and able to use a semi-automatic rifle and two handguns to shoot 14 people, killing four in seven different locations across his rural community before he died in a shootout with police. Tehama County Assistant Sheriff Phil Johnston says Neal had an ongoing dispute with one of the women killed.
In January of this year, he was arrested and charged with an assault with a deadly weapon on that person.
Police say a bigger death toll was averted when the killer was unable to break into an elementary school. U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions says he now recalls a Trump campaign meeting in which high-level Russian connections were raised. At that meeting, former advisor George Papadopoulos said he would use his Russian connections to set up a meeting between President Trump and Vladimir Putin. Sessions previously said he did not know of any communication between the campaign and Russian officials, but he insisted before the House Judiciary Committee yesterday he didn't lie.
I do now recall that the March 2016 meeting at the Trump Hotel that Mr. Papadopoulos attended, but I have no clear recollection of the details of what he said at that meeting.
Last month, Papadopoulos pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI about his contacts with Russia. The Obama health care law's requirement that Americans get insurance coverage is now pinned as a target of Republican lawmakers as they look to end the individual mandate to help pay for deep cuts in their tax legislation. Senate Republicans say they will scrap the mandate. Three UCLA men's basketball players accused of shoplifting in China are now back in Los Angeles. The Pac-12 conference says the matter has been resolved to the satisfaction of Chinese authorities. The three freshmen and school officials are to hold a news conference this morning. People magazine has named Blake Shelton its 2017 Sexiest Man Alive. Shelton can hold the accolade over the head of Adam Levine, his fellow coach on The Voice, and 2013 Sexiest Man Alive. Shelton's latest album hit number one on the Billboard Top Country Albums this week.
So two guys from The Voice were the top two on the Sexiest Man Alive thing?
Yeah, in the last couple of years.
All right.
Yeah.
That's a little suspicious, wouldn't you say? Well, let me ask you this. Would Blake Shelton or Adam Levine rank on your list?
Adam maybe, Blake no.
No? All right. 23 minutes now after the hour. Mine either. On This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Did you get that raise this year? The new survey by Bankrate.com finds you're probably in the minority if you did. 52% of American workers did not receive a salary increase the past 12 months, and the percentage is even higher for older workers. 64% of those 53 years and up did not see a recent wage increase. What's going on here? We're joined now by Greg McBride, chief financial analyst at Bankrate.com. Greg, explain the findings.
Well, it's second year in a row. What we find is, you know, it's almost a 50-50 shot that whether you got a pay increase this past year or not. Last year it was exactly 50-50. This year, actually a little bit more than half did not get a pay increase. 52% this year not getting a pay increase. I think, you know, it's consistent with, you know, we've had a slow growth economy where wage growth for so long was that missing ingredient to the economic puzzle. It's finally fallen into place. But for a lot of people, that those increases in pay, they've been too little, and as we're seeing, it's not consistent. It's not every year. On average, people getting a raise instead of every year, every other year.
We're speaking with Greg McBride, chief financial analyst at Bankrate.com. They've got a new survey that finds a majority of Americans are not getting salary increases. Are there groups who are getting raises or particular lines of work?
Yeah, what we found when we, you know, break it down in terms of, you know, what type of pay increase did you get, and then, you know, who was getting those. So, for example, you know, we found about 30% of workers got only a pay raise, 10% got a better paying job, 8% got both a pay raise and a better paying job. But what we found is that it tends to skew lower in that it was predominantly millennials that were not only more likely to get the pay increase, but their reasons for getting pay increases tended to be more performance-based, based on promotions, increasing job responsibilities, and less so the cost of living increase. You know, not only were older workers less likely to see the pay increase, but when they got one, it was most likely the cost of living increase, which, as we all know, that's a pretty meager pay increase.
So broadly speaking, then, is there hope for the folks who are not getting raises that they will anytime soon, given the, I guess, different, I don't know, things that are impacting the job market?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think given the tightness of the labor market and the fact that it's getting tighter and tighter, I think that, there's a real premium attached to those that continue to upgrade their skills, particularly technology skills, increase your level of education, get additional certifications, whatever you need to do to differentiate yourself.
Thanks, Greg. Greg McBride, he is Chief Financial Analyst at Bankrate.com. It is 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Hey, the holidays are fast approaching. Order gifts for everyone on your list with the click of a mouse. Let me tell you about Omaha Steaks and how for only $49.99, you can get the family gift pack when you go to omahasteaks.com and enter my code DEAL in the search bar. That's 75% off. Omaha Steaks offers the most flavorful, tender-aged beef, aged for 21 days to unlock the full flavors of the cuts, hand-trimmed and vacuum-sealed. They also have veggies, desserts, appetizers, fresh seafood, and so much more. Right now, Omaha Steaks is giving an exclusive savings for our listeners. Listen to everything that you'll get for less than $50. Two filet mignons, two top sirloins, two boneless pork chops, four boneless chicken breasts, four kielbasa sausages, four burgers, four potatoes au gratin, four caramel apple tartlets, one Omaha Steak seasoning packet, plus four additional kielbasa sausages free. Go to omahasteaks.com, enter my code DEAL in the search bar, and get a 75% savings. It's the gift guaranteed to be a hit.
Listen to us anytime on TuneIn at This Morning, America's First News with Gordon Deal, and on Stitcher at This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday, November 15. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Gunman kills 4 and injures 10 in a random spree in rural Northern California. Senate Republicans include a repeal of the Obamacare individual mandate in their tax reform proposal. Puerto Rico to get half of its power grid restored today. Da Vinci's 500-year-old portrait of Jesus, known as the Male Mona Lisa, goes up for auction today, expected to fetch at least $100 million. And the tiny towns that bid for Amazon's second headquarters yet have virtually no shot at winning, but hear how they pitch themselves in about 20 minutes. A recent poll finds that a record high percent of Americans favor legalizing marijuana. It follows other surveys published this year also showing that a clear majority of Americans support making marijuana consumption legal. But what's most interesting about a new Gallup survey is that it found that a majority of Americans of all political stripes are in favor of legalization. Data crunching from Harry Enten, reporter at 538.com. Harry, give us the findings.
The poll that I picked up was a Gallup poll. They showed that a record high 64% of Americans favor legalizing marijuana. But it's not just that we have that top line. It's also that a majority of Democrats, independents, and Republicans all support marijuana becoming legal. While at the same time, there just aren't a lot of politicians who seem to be at the forefront of wanting to make marijuana legal. So it's a very interesting contrast.
Wow. Any reason behind the politicians' anti-marijuana position?
I think that there are a few things that are going on. Number one, I think the positions on marijuana aren't held that strongly by the electorate, right? I mean, there are a lot of people who want marijuana to be legal, but only about 30% of Americans, according to a poll last year, felt strongly about it.
Okay.
Number two, I don't think a lot of people actually smoke weed. I know, we all know people who do, mm-hmm. but only about 28% of Americans told Marist College in March of 2017 that they'd be likely to buy and then use marijuana if it, in fact, was made legal by the federal government.
Oh, wow.
And then I'll point out one other thing that I think is very important, and that is essentially that oftentimes what we see on public issues is that federal officials will lag behind public opinion. Remember, it was no more than 15 years ago in which most Americans did not feel that marijuana should be legal, and in fact, majorities of members of both parties didn't want it to be legal. So I think politicians are just slow to react to the changing public tide in the same way that we saw on same-sex marriage. A lot of Democratic politicians were slow to get behind that bandwagon, even though pretty much all of their voters felt that same-sex marriage should be legal for a long time coming.
Wow. All right, so in the poll, it was discovered that 72% of Democrats, 67% of independents, and 51% of Republicans support marijuana becoming legal. Is it measurable to find out whether or not that's the first time a majority of each of those groups has said that they favor it?
Yeah, so in the Gallup poll, it definitely is. This is the first time in the Gallup poll in which a majority in all parties agreed that. Now, there are obviously some other surveys that are out there that pretty much correspond with that finding. But with Gallup, what we really have is a long data set going back a long period of time since the 70s, and this is the first time ever that we've seen that a majority of people in all three parties agree that it should be legal. And the big boost in this particular survey was among Republicans. It was just a year ago in which that percentage who said that marijuana should be legal was in the low 40s, and that hiked up almost about 10 percentage points. So it's quite an interesting contrast where you have Jeff Sessions, who's the Attorney General of the United States, telling these states, you know, that have legalized marijuana, hey, you know, I'm not sure you should necessarily be doing that, so on and so forth, while a majority of his own party members believe that marijuana should, in fact, be legal.
Wow. We're speaking with Harry Enten, senior political writer and analyst at 538.com. He's got a piece entitled, "Everyone Agrees That Weed Is Great, Except Politicians," looking at some new polling. All right, so speaking of the marijuana issue, there are issues in which we have significant separations between the parties. Explain those.
Yeah, so what was interesting about marijuana is that, you know, you get majorities of both parties who agree about this, and there's so few issues these days in which a majority of both parties agree on something. So, for instance, you know, we've been having this gun control debate back and forth in Washington after the massacre in Las Vegas, and what we see is vastly different opinions where about three-quarters of Democrats believe that it's more important to control gun ownership than protect people's rights to own guns, while Republicans, it's the exact opposite, where about three-quarters of voters who identify as Republicans believe that protecting gun ownership is more important than controlling it. Or we could talk about building the wall along the Mexican border, where we have a vast majority of Republicans who believe we should do that, while the vast majority of Democrats who believe we shouldn't do that. It's not that way with marijuana. This is one of the few issues in which a majority of both parties agree on something.
Thanks, Harry. Harry Enten, reporter at 538.com. It's 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Hey, reminder, by the way, we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter, too, with the username at This Morning Show. If you'd like to follow me directly, warning, lots of cynicism and sarcasm. But I'm on Twitter with the username at Gordon Deal. Glad you're with us. Welcome into Wednesday. Some entrepreneurs see a business opportunity in leftovers. Restaurants, supermarkets, commercial kitchens in the U.S. waste $57 billion of food each year. A startup called Spoiler Alert, founded by some MIT grads, is helping food makers and wholesale distributors better manage unsold inventory and increase donations. Sysco, for example, the largest food distributor in North America, said Spoiler Alert had helped it redirect roughly 700,000 pounds of food worth about $1 million. More on this segment of the startup industry from Wall Street Journal reporter Heather Haddon. Heather, what have you found?
Yeah, so there's a lot of food in the U.S. And around the world, really, that is wasted. So either it's never makes it off the farm, or if it's never sold at grocery stores, either because it's, you know, maybe cosmetically imperfect, or it has a sell-by date, best-by date that it crosses before someone actually is able to buy it. Or it's just too much. So in that Tenderloin case, a small supplier on a ranch out in the Mountain States had a big hotel client who they had sold a whole lot of ground beef to, but then they have all this tenderloin left over, and as a small supplier, they really didn't know how to market it quickly and to be able to sell it. So enter a new crop of startups that are trying to help tackle food waste and make money while doing it. So in this case, this Colorado-based startup called Food Maven essentially has set up a marketplace where they take this food, they say, they call it lost food as opposed to wasted food, food that would be otherwise lost in the supply chain either by, you know, food companies that make it or distributors, and they sell it at a discount to restaurants who want to buy it, to you know, commercial kitchens, others who might want to buy this food in big quantities but at a discount. And so they help facilitate that transaction and take a cut of it.
It strikes me that this might have to be a regional type of startup, because you might have to deliver some of this stuff quickly.
Yeah, so one of the big things that they've really had to invest in is logistics and, the handling of this food. So they do have interest in expanding nationally, but they're going to have to do that on a very market-by-market basis because, as you say, they really have to invest in the safe handling and trucking and warehousing of this food. So they essentially act as a middleman, but to be that middleman, you have to invest a lot to do that.
Mm. All right, so besides a food maven in Colorado, who else is doing something where?
So there's, this food waste issue has become really more and more of an issue that consumers care about and companies care about. So they're all looking for ways to deal with this. So another startup I mentioned the story based out in the Massachusetts area has really helped big food distributors like Sysco to help more effectively donate their food that would otherwise be wasted and just handle their supply better. So they've donated about $1 million worth of food since teaming up with this startup. Other startups really look at, they deploy technologies that can really help companies look at their efficiencies. So really like using cameras and scales to really get a sense of the amount of food that they should be proportioning and not waste it.
Thanks, Heather. Wall Street Journal reporter Heather Haddon. 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for three straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in defense, cybersecurity, mobility, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan among the top 10 states in the country for business. To learn more, visit michiganbusiness.org. Small business never stops moving, so Dell's U.S.-based small business technology advisors are trained to keep up. Just call 877-BUY-DELL to get connected with an advisor who will get to know your business and tailor a solution with Dell PCs powered by Intel Core processors that is right for you, so you can focus on your business and leave the tech questions to Dell. Call 877-BUY-DELL to get in touch with a tech advisor today. Thanks for being with us. Intelligence isn't necessarily the most important consideration for every job. Some pharmaceutical companies, for example, find optimism is the most important predictor of success in salespeople. But QZ.com says it's perhaps a bit jarring to see where intelligence landed when 500 staffing professionals were given a choice of six qualities in potential job candidates and asked to pick the three traits that were most important to them. I think you know where this is going. Professionalism was first, followed by reliability at number two. Then came leadership ability, friendliness, and confidence to round up the top five. Yes, intelligence checked in last at number six. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon Attorney General Jeff Sessions offered his latest round of testimony to lawmakers on Capitol Hill, during which he fielded more questions about his and other Trump campaign associates' encounters with the Russian government over the course of the 2016 campaign. Sessions rebuffed accusations he lied about his interactions with Trump advisor Carter Page.
I made no response to him, didn't acknowledge it. And you're accusing me of lying about that? I say that's not fair, Mr. Jeffries.
Sessions' testimony provided new insight to the inner workings of the campaign and communications with Russian entities. Washington Republicans continue to tighten pressure on Alabama's GOP to keep a defiant Roy Moore from being elected to the Senate next month, with many voicing hope that President Trump could use his clout to resolve a problem that Republicans say leaves them with no easy options. With Alabama Republicans reluctant to enrage Moore's loyal conservative supporters, national GOP leaders are turning to the president as their best chance of turning the tide. A gunman killed four people in a remote Northern California community yesterday, but a much bigger death toll was averted when the killer was unable to break into an elementary school. The staff at Tiny Rancho Tehama Elementary School moved quickly when they heard gunfire nearby. The gunman's precise motives are unclear, but a dispute with a neighbor who was found dead may have sparked the rampage. Following President Trump's visit to Beijing, China today said it will send a high-level special envoy to North Korea amid an extended chill in relations between the neighbors over Pyongyang's nuclear weapons and missiles program. The head of China's ruling Communist Party's International Department will travel to Pyongyang on Friday. And this might make you feel a little old. It's been 25 years since the release of Home Alone 2, Lost in New York. To celebrate, the Plaza Hotel, which played a prominent role in the film, is offering a package that allows guests to live it up like Kevin McAllister. Starting at $895, you get in-room and hotel experiences inspired by Kevin's time at the Plaza, including a limo trip through the city and an over-the-top ice cream sundae from room service.
Say 5 years or 25 since that movie came out? Oh, my.
Ouch.
6 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. As you know, Amazon is shopping for a second home with an international airport within 45 minutes, a metro area of more than a million people, public transportation options, and universities with software developer graduates. It has attracted bids from big urbane suitors such as Boston and Dallas. It's also fielded proposals, though, from Rockdale, Texas, population 5,600. Brags about a few stoplights and an annual rodeo. The Wall Street Journal says Rockdale is among 238 cities that have applied yet don't quite fit the bill. Also pitching, Anchorage, Alaska, where one of two small business owners hand-delivered a proposal to Amazon the day it was due. Even Alaska's entire statewide population of around 740,000 doesn't make Amazon's cut. Scarborough, Maine, says it's unclear which of Amazon's requests are mandatory and which are just preferences. The coastal resort town of about 19,000 is proposing a harness racetrack location. It also says being close to Portland is a big selling point because Portland has great beer. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.